This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There was a statement made in the NBA last night. Are we poised for another this evening? Plus tons of playoff hockey to get into, as well as the NFL, the sport that never sleeps. Plenty of news and notes that are coming out of OTAs as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. No Mike Palm today. He's doing the media rounds for Circa Survivor, Circa Millions, but very excited to have another wonderful Mike with us at the desk over there in LA. Mike Somich, VSiN host and handicapper, host of The Handle every weekend with Matt Brown. Welcome in, Mike. How are we doing today?
We're doing good. We're just shuffling the mic deck here. You go from Michael to Mike Palm to Mike Somich. You're just interchangeable here. That's what we love to do.
You know, it's good for me, Mike, because I have memory issues. So the fact that, like, I don't have to worry about name mix up is a real blessing to set the table for what we have going on later on today. At the end of hour one, 10:45 Pacific, 1:45 Eastern, we'll take a deep dive into the Ravens and the AFC North. A sprinkle of Orioles, Mike, because I know you love some baseball talk. But Baltimore radio host and beat reporter Cordell Woodland will join us. And then in the second hour at 2:15 Eastern, Tom Byrne of SiriusXM NBA Radio is going to stop by. We'll dive into all things NBA Eastern and Western Conference Finals, which is where we should start here, because Celtics Pacers in the East yesterday, Celtics take a 2-0 lead. And when you have game one, that was this classic thriller, unless of course you're the Pacers and you're on the other end of it, that loss to me now in the light of day just looks that much worse and that much more frustrating when in the third quarter last night, you feel like you're still in it and Tyrese Halliburton has to limp off the court dealing with a re-aggravation of a hamstring injury that already hampered him earlier this season. The game falls apart. They lose 126-110. And now, I don't know about you, but I felt like the Pacers could be live to win a couple games in this series, one or two. Now I feel like they're dead in the water.
Yeah, well, before we get into basketball, I got to say, you got me excited with the sprinkle of Oreos. The Oreo Blizzard, undefeated. So I was thinking maybe we're getting a little Oreo introduction into the show. O's are good, too. We like the, you know, Oreos are fine as well. Yeah, this was brutal for the Pacers. And really, that game one was brutal for the Pacers. When you look back at this and you're that big of an underdog heading into the series, the idea of having to win five of the seven games, which essentially is what you have to do after you blow that game one, it just seems so daunting, especially against a team like the Celtics, who have been a truck the whole season, who look like they're going to get Porzingis back later part of this series as well. It felt like that you had to take one or two in Boston, and after losing game one, it was hard to see them being able to come out and take game two. Now you got Halliburton with the hamstring. Indiana's been a better team at home. Their role players have stepped up, shot the ball better at home. It's hard to see them going home without 100% Halliburton and being able to take both of these games, which is really what they have to do. They cannot lose either of these games in Indiana if they want to compete for the series. I said Celts 4-2 going into this. It sure feels like it's 4-0 or 4-1 now, Stormy. It's going to be hard for the Pacers to be able to bounce back from these two games in Boston.
Celtics win and cover, total goes way over again. And as you look at the number there for game three in Indiana, there is a slight adjustment because they are on the road. Celtics down from the -9/-10 range to 7, total 222.5. Did it surprise you that the total has kind of not fluctuated more given the way these games have soared over?
Not totally. I leaned toward the under in the first game. I didn't end up betting it. I actually played the under last night and I was feeling good at half. It was 224.5 and we were sitting at 108. So had some room to give. And then the second half, both teams shot very well. Two quarters that went well over the totals for each of them. And the game ends up flying over. I'm not shocked specifically with the Halliburton move. We're only seeing a 2-point adjustment flipping from Boston to Indiana in the line. That's basically the Halliburton number, right? That's why we're not seeing a larger adjustment as the Pacers head home. But he's a key part of this offense as well and a key part of them pushing the pace. So without Halliburton, that hinders Indiana's ability to really run up and down the floor offensively and take early shots in the shot clock. He's the one who's going to be handling the ball. Now that falls off to players who are not nearly as talented from an assist perspective. And a lot of players who aren't willing to just pull up for three a lot, like we've seen Halliburton do in the playoffs. So he affects both the side and the total significantly here. I think that's why we're sitting here at this 222, 223 right number right now when we're looking at game three.
In the series as well, Celtics go from -1600 to -8,000. The Pacers, a 30-1 shot if you want to take a shot. So as your boy Matt Brown likes to say, a non-zero chance, right, that the Pacers could win, but it's not feeling particularly likely. What did you make of Rick Carlisle's decision in the fourth quarter to go ahead and sit his starters? I feel like we always criticize Tom Thibodeau for not doing that when games get away from you one way or the other, but Carlisle saying, in his postgame press conference that he wasn't waving the white flag. And it's always funny when coaches say things that we just know not to be true. Like, clearly that's what you were doing. And, you know, you lose the battle sometimes with the hopes of coming back in the war. That was my perspective. But what did you think of Rick Carlisle there down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, he had his fingers crossed in that press conference because he knew that he was lying. There's no way they weren't waving the right flag when they took the starters out. But I agree with him. Look, this is a team that just came off a tough 7-game series against the Knicks, a very tough game one as well, where you played overtime. Anytime you can kind of steal some minutes, steal some rest. And in this case, they weren't coming back. They were not going to find a way to beat Boston in game two when they were down so much later in that game. It makes sense to take your starters out, be able to rest them. You're headed home. You now know the importance of game three, where it's a must-have game for the Pacers. You might as well make sure that you don't have injuries that come up as well. I mean, we saw that Knicks team get absolutely decimated by injuries because of the minutes that they were putting on their starters. And now you see Halliburton limp off the court. The last thing you want to do is see Siakam get hurt, right? You cannot lose him at this point. It didn't make any sense to essentially, for what was a 1% chance you're coming back, risk injury and add minutes to your starters, which you're going to heavily rely on here in game three at home.
Yeah, Tyrese Halliburton already down. You don't want to risk anymore. As much as Rick Carlisle says, you know, there are a couple guys that I just felt I wanted to get a look at. Okay, whatever you say there, buddy. Turning the page to the Western Conference coming up tonight, game two in the Western Conference Finals. Mavs +5.5 at the Timberwolves, total 207.5. The underdog wins on the money line in game one. How do you evaluate them tonight?
Look, we talked about this one yesterday, Stormy, on the show. I bet the Mavs +5.5 yesterday. I wasn't sure if we were going to get this same number. The first game was 4.5, and I understand why we clicked up a point here. I thought, you know, Minnesota looks like they have another level. That first game was not a great spot for Minnesota, specifically because they were coming off that 7-game series with Denver as well. But you look at what Minnesota did in the game, and yes, they took a lot of threes. I believe it was 48, 49 three-pointers in that game. That's not normal for them. But they hit it a high percentage. And so it wasn't, to me, a big negative on that front. And they started out 10 for 20 from three. But this was a Mavs team that we saw all the different aspects of them in that first game. They were able to get Kyrie going in the first half. It didn't look like anyone was really able to guard him. He puts up 20 early. You get to see the dominant Luka Doncic in the second half and specifically closing out the game. That's a huge edge for Dallas in this series. They have two closers and a closing offense that is very efficient, where the Timberwolves have struggled with that all year long. And that's what we saw. The Timberwolves had a lead. They could not put that first game away. I like Dallas plus the points here. Dallas only shot 6 for 25 from three. They didn't take a ton of corner threes in that game because of how the Timberwolves were defending specifically Luka and Kyrie and not allowing that corner three. Well, you can't let Luka and Kyrie do what they did in game one if you want to win game two here. If you're the Timberwolves, I think you see an adjustment not in defense here, and you're going to get more open looks. I don't want to say I'm positive that the Mavericks role players are going to be able to knock those threes down. But at this point, it's hard to doubt them with what they've been able to do throughout the playoffs. I think 5.5 is too much. I think that this should be somewhere in that 3.5-4 range. So I'm happy to take the Mavs as a dog here.
Yeah, they win the game not playing their best. So completely understand that perspective. We've seen a flip of favorites in the series as a whole as well. The Timberwolves went from -170 to +140. The Mavs now at that -165 price to win the whole set. Also in the NHL, road teams were holding court. The Oilers last night take game one in Dallas 3-2 in double overtime. The Oilers blow a 2-goal lead, had to overcome a 4-minute penalty in first overtime from Connor McDavid. But I think all is forgiven when he hits the game-winning goal in second OT, 32 seconds in. What a freaking pass and setup by Evan Bouchard, by the way. Just a heads-up play for them to get there, and the Oilers take game one.
Yeah, what a hockey game. I mean, this was a phenomenal game. We saw Dallas push early. You have a big stop from Skinner on a breakaway for Dallas in the first period. They can't get on the board. Edmonton gets two quick ones and six shots in the second period. So all of a sudden, you've got a 2-0 Edmonton lead. And we've seen them do this before. I mean, they blew multiple goal leads multiple times in that Vancouver series. Dallas able to come back. And you mentioned that 4-minute power play. That was a huge, huge turning point in this game. Dallas had pressure the entire time. Ends up hitting two posts on that power play, including one where it goes off the post and goes back through the goalie's legs, like a reverse five hole. And they just cannot capitalize on that massive opportunity. We saw Connor McDavid have one of the best scoring chances I've ever seen in the first overtime, where he gets stoned by the stick of Ottinger, but he's able to make up for it, gets the goal to give Edmonton the win. It's interesting when you look at simulations, Dallas won this game. When you look at expected goals, Dallas won this game, but Edmonton gets the break in overtime, gets the job done. I've got a big Dallas series bet. I came back and I bet a little more Dallas this morning. I still think they're the better team in this series. I didn't think they played their A game. I thought this was as good as the Oilers can play. I still like Dallas to be able to get out of the West.
Well, and to that point, their plus money price now plus 165. The Oilers minus 195. Coming up in game two tomorrow, Dallas is a short favorite, minus 135. The total in that one, 5.5. The Oilers now, it was interesting. That's their sixth one-goal win of the postseason, their ninth one-goal game. So many of the Oilers' performances that we've seen in the playoffs have been close and come down to the wire.
Yeah, whenever they get a lead, they just give it up. They have no interest in holding it. And then when you have that situation, you know, it's interesting because it's hard to evaluate this Edmonton team, because when they're down, they play phenomenal hockey. When they have a lead, they just stop pushing. And that to me is the scariest part about these teams. And we see when Dallas has a lead, when Florida has a lead, they just step on the throat of their competition. They do not let them get quality scoring chances. They continue pushing, continue trying to score. Edmonton does the exact opposite. They just kind of back off and let the other team push and push and push. And it feels like those goals are inevitable. It's just whether or not the clock runs out in time. And that's why they're playing so many close games.
I love, though, that you're like, I like Dallas beforehand. They lost game one at home. I don't care. I'm betting more Dallas. We also have game two tonight where the Rangers lost game one at home, 3-0 against the Panthers. That's a pick'em game tonight. Rangers minus 108, Panthers minus 112. Total in that one, 5.5. And we got juice to the under again at minus 125. Okay, we are just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to football. The Lions enter 2024 with big expectations. Is Detroit poised to take a Super Bowl step in year four under Dan Campbell? We'll hit that and a whole lot more of the news and sound coming out of OTAs next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the betting tools and content we've got at VSiN.com. Best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips and trends. And right now on the homepage, VSiN senior NBA analyst JBT has previews, picks and predictions up for the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. We've got daily write-ups in the NHL, MLB, WNBA, plenty of NFL offseason content as well. This week, our own Michael Lombardi, he's got a column covering the interim coach dilemma, breaking down why interim coaches tend to struggle after transitioning to the full-time head coaching gig, and how to approach Antonio Pierce and the Raiders in the betting market. Check it all out today at vsin.com. Alongside Mike Somich today, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line. And while we're on the NFL, might as well go right to it because OTAs are well underway. And with that, Mike, we hear, you know, so-and-so has not seen a ball hit the ground at practice, and Aaron Rodgers looks amazing, and Dak Prescott is there, but CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons isn't on site at OTAs. What are the important things? Like, what are you looking at during OTAs that you feel like you can actually evaluate and use as a better, and what do you just have to put to the side?
A lot of it I just put to the side. I'm not too worried about OTAs. I'm more interested in how rookies are doing, how rookies are developing, what players who I think are competing for roster spots are doing versus the stars. Like, I trust that you're going to see, you know, someone like Tua, for instance, who has been there for some, missed some. I'm not as worried about him coming in and clicking with the wide receivers, right? He played with his two main targets last year. You've got Beckham coming in, but Beckham's a veteran, should be able to fit into that offense well. I'm more concerned about how guys like Drake May are doing, how guys like Bo Nix are doing. What are we getting from a coach soundbite perspective of those guys? Because they're the ones who are going to hinge some of my bets once we get into the early weeks and then later weeks of the season. So for me, it's not the stars. It's the younger guys and the roster spot guys that I'm more concerned about.
Yeah, it's interesting and definitely important to keep an eye on, especially for those guys. Like you said, Drake May, and that's one that stands out to me so much because while so many of us anticipate that it's going to be Jacoby Brissett out the gate, Drake May has a lot to learn, as his head coach Gerard Mayo has said, but for how long? Like, at what point do we anticipate seeing Drake May? So all interesting points well taken. You mentioned Tua, he and Trevor Lawrence, both two players that are going through whether or not and when they're going to get their contracts. One guy who already figured his out was Jared Goff, and the Detroit Lions are a team that, for the first time in a long, long time, have real, genuine expectations. We're talking Super Bowl expectations. Their head coach, Dan Campbell, was asked about just that at his press conference yesterday. Take a listen.
I don't see bust. I see Super Bowl. I don't know what the bust is. So
Super Bowl or nothing.
It's, you know, here's what I know, man. We all know what every team ought to have that. right? Every team ought to be like, man, what are you playing for? You're playing for a Super Bowl. So we're no different than that. But I think, yeah, we know that now. We work backwards from there. And so you got to set yourself up no different than last year. Certain things you got to do to really make that valid, make that a reality.
And he's right, right? That should be the goal for every team. But for this team, it feels like it's a realistic possibility. I know he says Super Bowl or bust. I don't know what the bust is. But obviously they made it to an NFC championship a year ago, had it in their grasp. And then it was a historic comeback from the 49ers that took away what was a historic season from the Lions. So what do you think about this team this year?
I love the Lions this year. I think they set up phenomenally to be able to do well in the NFC. I need to go out and I need to buy a drum and I need to paint Jared Goff for MVP on it, because I've been banging the Jared Goff MVP drum so loud across this network. He's 40-1 right now. That's a wild price to me. This is a Lions team that starts out with a relatively easy schedule. It's an offense that's bringing everybody back, including Ben Johnson, the OC, who I don't think any of us thought was coming back during the playoffs last year. He ends up back on the roster. Goff gets paid. To me, this is a Lions offense that should be able to do very well against their early opponents. And specifically, their setup is beautiful because they only have to play three outdoor games. One of those, Green Bay in November. You've got Chicago. You've got San Francisco outdoors later in the season. But outside of those two games, they should never have a weather issue in any game, which is a big thing that we talk about with Jared Goff and with this offense. On top of that, I love what they did in the draft. They go out, they address the cornerback position, they add some defense as well. To me, this is a Lions team that is just ready to roll in this spot. And you look at your 49ers, Stormy, and the schedule that they had set up. This is a situation where they're coming in, they have to take on four teams coming off byes, four good teams coming off byes. The Lions have to be focused on the one seed in the NFC. I think they have a very nice path to get it. And if they do, all of a sudden, they're playing at home throughout the entire playoffs. And we saw what an edge that was last year. I think it's all systems go for Detroit this year. And I'm surprised to say that because I didn't love them last year. But coming into the regular season, after looking at the schedule, I think Detroit is going to be the one seed in the NFC.
Well, and I love that you mentioned those three true outdoor road games, because the numbers speak for themselves when it comes to Jared Goff indoors and outdoors. His quarterback rating inside, 104. His rating outside, 87. Last year specifically, outdoors, 7 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Indoors, 23 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. So it speaks for itself. Jared Goff, he's got a full arsenal of weapons. Amon-Ra St. Brown gets paid. He's got Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery, Sam Laporta. Apparently Dan Campbell says Jameson Williams is a man on a mission and has been the most improved player since spring practices have begun. He was number 2 in passing last year, to support your MVP theory. The offense as a whole, number 3 in the league. There's a lot of reason for optimism, but what does that mean now in terms of betting the team? Are you interested in them to win a second straight division after having not done it for 30 years? Their win total is 10.5. They tied for the second best record last year with 12. Are they going to get over that number again to set themselves up in that position? Those are the things I'm wondering. In terms of their win total specifically, do you lean over then based on your thought process of them gunning for that high seed in the NFC?
Yeah, I like their over quite a bit at 10.5. I think this is a team that could start out 7-1, 8-0, somewhere in that range. And if you start out 7-1 or 8-0, if you want to come back, you're going to be able to get an under win total sitting there at 13.5 and get a middle between that 11, 12, and 13 win number. I think this early schedule just breaks perfectly for them. The one concern I have around Detroit is that the early bye. I believe it's week 4, week 5 that they have the bye there. That's a little bit of a concern because injuries can pile up heading into the playoffs. I do like them to win the division quite a bit, plus 150. This is just an interesting case where you've got a Lions team who I think got better in the offseason, but you look at the hype around the Bears, the hype around the Packers. They're taking money that's basically betting on the come, right, versus betting on what we know, where you can bet on what we know with this Lions team, which is they're going to be very good and should be better than they were last year. If that's the case, plus 150, a nice price in the division.
Yeah, plus 150 in the NFC North, plus 550, second shortest shot in the NFC behind only San Francisco. Another person on the mic yesterday, Giants quarterback Daniel Jones, as he enters the final year of guaranteed money in the big contract that he signed last offseason, told reporters he's feeling good coming off the ACL and that there's no doubt he'll be ready to go for the start of the season. What's your perspective on Daniel Jones and the Giants? Because obviously there's all the rumbling and talk about the draft, about how they wanted Drake May. The Patriots weren't willing to deal that pick for them to get up there. Now, Drew Locke could be a realistic starter week 1. Daniel Jones says he's ready to go. I'm very excited for this weird offseason hard knock situation following New York, but what do you think?
You know, I think I might be one of the last people who doesn't think Daniel Jones is awful. I thought the situation last year was absolutely atrocious for him. That offensive line couldn't block anybody. If you remember, like, the opening game against the Cowboys, he had less than, like, it didn't seem like there was anyone blocking for him, period. He was just under pressure constantly. There's no weapons on the outside last year. All of a sudden, there's some weapons there. You add Neighbors. You've got Waller. I realize you lost Barkley. I think that's probably the biggest loss here for the Giants with how much they relied on him. But I don't hate this Giants team, and I don't hate Daniel Jones' chance to be successful. Obviously, coming off the injury, a pretty big concern. ACL, a major injury there for him. But I look back to what he did 2 years ago with Brian Daboll inside this system. I think Daboll's a phenomenal coach who has had nothing to work with for two seasons. We'll see what he's able to do now that he has Neighbors, now that defense should be a little bit better. The ceiling for him is third in the division, which is unfortunate. But I do think they're going to be better than they were last year.
Win total 6.5, and you are getting plus money on that over. They had 6 wins last year, so if they're better, you think that they'll get that. There you go. And to your point, the offensive line did not help the cause for Daniel Jones and his struggles early on before he got hurt. Allowed the second most sacks in NFL history on the year as a whole with 85. Jones in those 6 starts was sacked 30 times. And now, you mentioned Saquon Barkley. He goes from that offensive line to the best one by far that he's ever had in his career. And he said at Eagles OTAs that he feels like a rookie again. He's so reinvigorated.
It's new. I like the Eagles team. Just going out there trying to learn the system. Biggest thing, you know, that struck me is our first 7-on-7 huddle. You see AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, and Jalen Hurts. It's not a bad group to be out there with, and that's not even including offensive linemen.
Yeah, not a bad situation.
No, not bad at all. I mean, it's a star-studded fantasy roster there in Philadelphia. And I feel like Philadelphia's a little undervalued. People remember how the season ended, but they started 11-1 last year and then had to try and run that gauntlet that we all expected them to struggle with. I actually upgraded them 2.5 points in the offseason because I felt like their year-end rating was not anywhere near what they should be when they start this season. I think you're going to see a lot different Philly team, a lot more like we saw 2 years ago than we saw last year.
Yeah, and this is 20 straight seasons without a repeat division winner. So maybe you do just cross out the Cowboys and say Eagles after that 10-1 start last year when you should have had the division, you'll get back on top. They're a plus 115 favorite in the NFC East. And if Barkley really does feel like his rookie season, I'm sure the Eagles would feel good if he got another 1,300 yards and 11 touchdowns like he did that year. We're going to hit the break. It wouldn't be the Lombardi line if we didn't bring a game to the fold. So Bettor's Choice coming up next. Get ready.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You know, we here at the Lombardi Line are always here to help you out. And right now, we're offering our annual VSiN subscription at a great price. It's usually $240. You can grab a full subscription now for just $199. Plus, if you sign up today, we're also giving you an extra 2 months for free. I'm talking 14 months of VSiN Pro access. That's less than 50 cents a day when you use our promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro, only $199, but you need to use that promo code Lombardi. This is the Lombardi Line. Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Somich with you. Somich in, usually hosting the handle every weekend, and you will be back there tomorrow and Sunday, but appreciate you stepping in today to fill in for Mike. And we like to play games on Fridays, have a little bit of fun, take a unique perspective on some things that we're talking about a lot. And with all of the talk with the schedule release coming out and people diving into week one of the NFL, we thought we'd take it a step further, Mike, and go week one in the NFL, pairing it with week one in college football and making you do kind of a would you rather situation. So how are we feeling?
Oh, we're feeling good. We're feeling good. I haven't gotten my full deep dive into college football yet, but this is an interesting way to start looking at some of the teams. So spent some time here diving into these college football games. We'll see. I think I have a couple of actual opinions in the NFL, so excited to talk about those specific games and a couple ones I'm going to defer to the college here as well. So excited to get it going here with a little would you rather.
Yeah, good deal. And I also think, too, it's worth pointing out before we dive into these specific games that Whereas in the NFL, sometimes betting on these early lines, there's not a ton of an edge or an advantage. But in college football, we see a lot of these lines shift a lot between now and when we get into the regular season. So, you know, just food for thought. Get the wheels turning a little bit. And we are going to start with a Jacksonville theme. Would you rather bet the Jacksonville State Gamecocks -3.5 against Coastal Carolina or the Jacksonville Jaguars +3.5 against the Miami Dolphins? Any interest in either one of those?
You know, I'm going to go with Jacksonville State here. They were a team that I enjoyed betting on last year. They were able to make multiple moves during the regular season. They were up in division for the first time and played very well. They look to have most of their roster back. Obviously, we had the transfer portal. We've had some spring games, so it's hard to figure out exactly what we're going to see. But I look at the other side. This is a Miami team laying 3.5 at home against Jacksonville, first game of the season. I like Miami in that spot. I think that that they're going to be able to kind of pick their score against that Jacksonville defense. I'm not sure what we're going to see from the Jacksonville Jaguars offense yet. So give me Jacksonville State here, and I'll lay the points with them.
You know what? I'm with you, too, because the Chanticleers enter a new era without Grayson McCall at quarterback. You know, the mullet man is over there at NC State now. He's moved on. And I was just looking through Jacksonville State's schedule. They lost at Coastal, yes, last year with McCall on the field, but their other losses were against Liberty, who went on to play in the Fiesta Bowl, at South Carolina, which is an SEC team, and a 10-win New Mexico State team by a field goal. So, yeah, first year in FBS, they have 8 wins. They're really good. I'm with you there. Okay, let's go from Jacksonville to the Lions. And so, you know, we're just going to mix it up with themes here. The Penn State Nittany Lions, which, by the way, our producer Justin has a Penn State hat on today. So I feel like he's certainly the one that picked this one. Penn State -10 against the West Virginia Mountaineers, or the Detroit Lions -3 against the Rams opener on September 8th.
I don't think it's going to be a shock to anyone after my Lions love last segment. Give me the Detroit Lions. I'll lay the 3 here at home, taking on the Rams. I have no interest in laying 10 points to the Nittany Lions pretty much ever, because that's what we've seen from their offense the last few years. And I like this Detroit Lions team. So give me the Lions here -3 against the Rams week 1.
I'm with you there. I was looking at West Virginia. That game they played week 1 last year as well. The final was 38-15. Drew Aller got me so excited. I remember he has 300 some yards, 3 touchdowns. I'm like, you know what? All of my offseason thought about the way that this guy is going to be, he's going to take off and then just turns into the dink and dunk master the rest of the way. But, you know, Penn State, I kind of feel for them looking at their schedule this year with this new look Big Ten. They've got to make a West Coast trip. UCLA, USC, Washington mixed into the schedule now. It's not just your 2-game schedule anymore with the way that things are looking different in that conference with conference realignment. Okay, from Lions to Tigers. Do we have Bears? No Bears. Okay, it's Tigers here. The LSU Tigers -6 against USC on September 1st. ABC, that game's going to be right here in Las Vegas, by the way, at Allegiant Stadium, or the Cincinnati Bengals -9 against the Pats.
I think the expectation is I'm going to say the Bengals -9. Well, I love that as a teaser leg. Not really looking to lay 9 week 1 with Joe Burrow after what we've seen with him getting ready for seasons this far out the last couple of years. So give me the LSU Tigers. I'll lay the 6 here. I realize we have to completely revamp that offense, lost 2 wide receivers, lose their quarterback. But look, USC lost Caleb Williams as well. They lost their wide receiver #1, lost their running back #1. Both of these schools can retool well, but the difference is I don't see the offensive line for USC being any good again this year. And that defense has been absolutely atrocious, where I expect LSU's to be a little bit better this year. I'll lay the 6 with the LSU Tigers here in this spot, though I will tease the Bengals all day, every day, Stormy.
2 things here with LSU USC. What a job by the schedule makers, by the way, to have this opening weekend, because even though they're no longer there, you can still have all the storylines of the 2 former Heisman Trophy winners that go 1-2 in the NFL draft. Now, how do these teams figure it out without their stars and, you know, all that stuff? I think that's fun. With the Bengals and Patriots, though, I do wonder, so much of the talk with Survivor and all the announcements that we had coming out yesterday from Derek and Mike Palm, I feel like this is for sure going to be the most picked game, I feel like, from week 1. Were there any other week 1 games, though, that just early have stood out to you in terms of a Survivor type deal?
This one, I think, is going to be the most picked one. It'll be interesting to see how many New Orleans picks we have. You got Carolina week one at New Orleans. It's one of the few times in the season that I feel like you're going to be able to use New Orleans if you want to go in that direction. So I think that's going to be another game that's going to be pretty popular on the Survivor side. Looking through it, I think those are going to be the two biggest ones. You've got, Tampa hosting Washington. It'll be interesting to see if people want to get frisky with that game as well. Because another one where you're probably not going to use them very often, Tampa Bay, and you get a rookie quarterback in week one with Washington there. So to me, those are the ones that jump out. I think this Bengals-Patriots one is going to be the big one. Stormy, I'm tempted to buy an entry and just play against the Patriots every single week. Stop. And in the weeks, just see if I can get a 0-17 Patriots team to carry me through Survivor.
Wow, you think they're going to be that bad? That bad?
I think they're going to be bad. I have at least wins plus 475. I think that's numbers wrong. They've got one of the toughest schedules in the NFL. Carolina, the other team that's plus 475 right now, is one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. And when you look at in division, Carolina's is soft. You look at that at the Patriots, they've got Buffalo, they've got Miami, they've got the Jets. I mean, it's going to be a tough road this year for this Patriots team.
I actually did a whole rant yesterday about how Bryce Young is not a bust yet. Like, they have made conscious efforts to upgrade the offensive line that was brutal last year. They've brought in other weapons for Bryce Young. He's not going to have the dual voices in his ear with Frank Reich going to Thomas Brown. He has a head coach fired midseason. Like, there are a lot of reasons I think that you can still like Bryce Young and the Panthers playing in a weak division. So I'm with you. I think that the Patriots have a much tougher road at a similar win total as Carolina from that spot. Let's go to the Eagles. Would you rather take a bettor's choice for the Boston College Eagles plus 22 against Florida State to open, or the Philadelphia Eagles laying one in Sao Paulo against the Packers on that opening weekend Friday?
Well, look, the Boston College Eagles played Florida State very well last year, but that was one of their biggest games that was at home. I'm not sure they're able to do it again here. And I like this Philadelphia team. To me, this is two of the teams that are most strangely priced heading into the regular season for me. You've got the Philadelphia Eagles. I mentioned I upgraded during the offseason because I don't think that their end number from last year was anywhere indicative of what they'll be at the beginning of this year. And I look at the Packers, who are just the darling of the betting market right now. You've got Love at 12-1. They win the MVP. This team's taking money to win the Super Bowl, taking money to win the division. You are betting on the come with this Green Bay Packer team that they're going to just be better. And they very well could be. But the Eagles are still a very, very good football team. I'll lay the one with the Philadelphia Eagles here.
I'm going to jump ahead here to Maryland. Would you rather lay 24.5 points with the Terps against UConn or the Ravens plus 3 against the Chiefs in the opener on Thursday night?
I'm not betting against the Chiefs on the opener on Thursday night. So give me the 24.5 here with the Terps. UConn terrible at football, so that's a positive. True. At least. Hopefully Maryland able to blow them out. If it were 3.5 with the Ravens, we could talk about it. But at 3, I'd much rather have the Chiefs there. So I'll lay it with the Terps.
Yeah, UConn is not a football school, right? Like, so as much as we loved watching them dominate in hoops, it's one thing is not like the other, no doubt about it. Okay, we are going to hit the break here in a moment. I think we should stick with this Baltimore theme, though, because on the other side of the break, I'm very excited to welcome in our guest, Cordell Woodland. He covers the Ravens very closely, as well as the Orioles. So, Mike, you can get a little bit of your baseball fix with him. And notice I said Orioles, not Oreos this time. Although, if we had to go down that road, Double Stuff is clearly the favorite, and that's the way you would have to go, correct?
Oh yeah, Double Stuff, and you take one side off and you make it like the Quadruple Stuff, and then you actually see how many you can get inside the one Oreo. Have you ever tried that? I've had like 8 of the cream parts, Mike, with just the two edges before.
You are speaking to my soul. We're gonna have to get into this more later. Okay, we'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New DraftKings, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Alongside Mike Somich, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we continue diving into our football conversation. The AFC North, probably the toughest division in all of football, led by the Baltimore Ravens and defending MVP Lamar Jackson. Let's get into it with a little bit of help from Cordell Woodland, who joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Ravens and Orioles beat reporter, 105.7 The Fan, host of Shaking It Up Sports, joining us now. Appreciate you. And hey, have you seen Lamar Jackson in person? Is the weight really off? I feel like we're having the great weight debate with Lamar Jackson this week.
Yeah, it's definitely been that way. We have seen Lamar Jackson. He was out at OTAs on Wednesday, and we got to speak to him afterwards, and he was definitely asked quite a few questions about his weight. And you know, he was like, he wanted to get back to being more agile. He wanted to, you know, pick up some speed, and that was important to him. And I think we've seen Lamar now, you know, win an MVP with two different body types and really two different play styles. And I asked him on Wednesday, when's the last time he felt as agile as he does right now? And he said, you know, pretty much before COVID. So that was quite a bit ago. And I do think that Lamar wants to get back to being able to change the game with his legs when he gets in the open field. That's never changed in terms of him being able to do different things with his legs. But if you look at Lamar Jackson this year, a lot of the plays that he made with his legs, a lot of those highlights ended with him throwing the ball. And I think he definitely loves to do that. But I also think he wants the ability to kind of separate himself from defenses. And it's honestly been a few seasons since we've seen Lamar do that on a consistent basis.
I got to say, Cordell, that is a scary thought. A faster and more agile Lamar Jackson after what we've seen from him. Even last year when he was so dynamic with his legs. Now, with this Ravens team, one of the things that jumped out to me was the schedule. You've got three tough road games in the first 5 weeks. Also have Buffalo at home and that late bye. What have we heard out of the Ravens side here about specifically the schedule and then that start with the four tough games in the first 5 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're ready for it. John Harbaugh and those guys, we've talked to them about the schedule, and I want to say that Zach Ord, new defensive coordinator, he was asked about, you know, the gauntlet of quarterbacks that they're going to see to start this season. Patrick Mahomes week one, Dak Prescott week three, Josh Allen week four, and then you've got Joe Burrow week five. So, you know, they'll have their hands full this year for sure, but they're a team that doesn't shy away from any challenge when they, you know, they have Lamar Jackson on their side, so they feel like as long as he's available, they have a chance to win every game. I think, you know, it's a good thing that they're getting this Chiefs game out of the way in week one, because there's no pressure. It's, you know, it's not like you're having to play this team back in November, playing them in December, and it's a lot on the line. Oh, and then you still have, you know, the storylines hanging over your head from last year's AFC Championship game. So really no pressure in my mind to go play Kansas City week one. And the Ravens are really good usually in September. So we'll see what happens, but I don't think there's any easy weeks in the NFL.
The Ravens, a 3-point underdog in that game at Arrowhead, total 47.5. But it's a point well taken that you make about the quarterback specifically that the Ravens are going to have to face in those first 5 weeks. Without their defensive coordinator that led them to such high highs a season ago, like, what are your expectations for this defense and how they're built to compete with some of those QBs?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that I'm still trying to figure out myself, because Mike McDonald, in my opinion, was the best defensive coordinator in football last year. You look at not just the scheme that the Ravens played, but his in-game adjustments. That's what I thought was the best thing about him. I mean, you look at last season and you look at how they destroyed the Lions. You look at how they destroyed the Seahawks when they came to town, how they took it to the San Francisco 49ers and the Dolphins late in the season. I had never seen so many offensive coordinators and quarterbacks look lost against this defense the way it did last year. So there are a lot of questions about this team. They lost Patrick Queen. They lost a couple of corners. They lost Jadeveon Clowney, who was second on this team in sacks last year. So definitely a ton of questions just about the pass rush in itself. But the Ravens seem confident. And one thing John Harbaugh has said is that this defensive scheme is something that has been built over time. It's not like Mike McDonald came in and this was his thing, and now that he's gone, the scheme left with him. No, Mike McDonald was a part of the people that orchestrated this game. Zach Orr, the new defensive coordinator, he's a former player for the Ravens. He's been a linebacker coach for them. He knows this game in and out. He already has a great relationship with the players. So we'll see. I think naturally they were going to regress because they were so good last year. I think that was going to happen regardless. I do think there will be some early hiccups because Zach Orr has never called plays before, so he'll have to figure that part out. But overall, I think they're still very talented on that side of the ball, led by Justin Madubuike, Roquan Smith, and Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Kyle Hamilton back. Obviously got injured later in the season, but he was phenomenal at strong safety. So excited to see what he's able to do there. Now, the key acquisition in the offseason, Derrick Henry at the running back position, seems like a great fit for this offense. But what I think I'm most excited about is to see what they decide to do, or what the Ravens decide to do with Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely both on the field at the same time. We weren't able to get to see that a ton just because of the injuries that we saw to Mark Andrews. What are you seeing right now from the tight end perspective? And are we going to see a lot of two tight end sets with both these guys running loose over the middle?
Well, that's the hope. That's the hope out here in Baltimore because, I mean, like you said, they've got two dynamic tight ends. We know what Mark Andrews can do. He's a former All-Pro, and Isaiah Likely the last 2 years has looked great. The problem is he's only really looked great when Mark Andrews isn't there. So that's been kind of the number one thing for Todd Monken this offseason. How is he going to get the most out of both of those guys when they're on the field at the same time? You look back to the AFC Championship game last year, Isaiah Likely was pretty much a no-show. Mark Andrews as well, for the most part. I mean, and that was his first game back. And with that happening, Isaiah Likely kind of faded away. They can't have that happen if this offense is going to reach their peak. And I asked offensive coordinator Todd Monken about that yesterday, you know, and he said he's confident that they'll be able to get the most out of these guys, that they're still tweaking their system on a daily basis. These are two talented guys, and the best thing about them is that they're versatile. You don't have to necessarily line them up in line. You can put Isaiah Likely in the slot. You can use Mark Andrews or Likely as kind of this H-back type of player as well. So I'm curious to see how that'll unfold because that's going to be a key part to seeing this passing game go to the next level.
Cordell, real quickly, according to the odds with Joe Burrow coming back, the Bengals are the biggest competition for the Ravens in the division. Is that how you see it? Or if not, is there a dark horse in the division for you?
Yeah, on usual years, I would say that. But right now, you know, I think this division is so talented. I mean, the Browns looked dead in the water last year until Joe Flacco came along and really revived them and made that defense feel like their efforts weren't wasted. So, you know, we'll see what Deshaun Watson, they get back this year. But I just think defensively, the Browns are really good. And I know Nick Chubb's injury was gruesome, and we'll see what his recovery time is like. But if he's there, that's a big challenge as well. But honestly, I'm looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. I'm looking at them as a team that, you know, you look at the Steelers in years past, they stumble into 10 wins without having a quarterback. So now that they have a couple of quarterbacks now, I'm curious to see what that does for their team. But I think they have the chances to definitely make some noise this year if they're healthy.
Absolutely brutal division, and the teams inside of it all have pretty tough schedules here. While we still have you, Cordell, let's flip over to the Orioles real quick. Right now, three games back in the division, and one of the most interesting questions for me is, what do they do at the trade deadline here? We know how talented their AAA team is, how much young talent they have on this team right now. I'd assume they're going to be buyers. How do you think they try and extend this window that they have for championships right now without necessarily giving up any of these prospects that they really want to see in the major league level?
Yeah, that's the challenge. I mean, everybody wants to know, when is Mike Elias going to start letting go of some of these guys? And they did it a little bit on the back end of this pass off season to get Corbin Burns in here, traded Joey Ortiz out of there, and they really like him. So I'm curious to see what happens. I think that they're going to go after some arms. They definitely need arms. John Means just went back on the IL right now, and they were in the midst of a six-man rotation last night. Their bullpen kind of is falling apart right now. So they need some help on the back end of the bullpen, and I wouldn't be shocked if they go and get a guy that can kind of be a hybrid in the rotation and in the bullpen as well. But I think they need somebody that can take some walks as well. This lineup has struggled. They're home run or bust. So if they're going to look to be a better on-base type of team, I think they're going to need somebody that can come in here and take some pitches.
Cordell, you're awesome. Thank you so much for taking some time today.
Thanks for having me.
Cordell Woodland. Follow him at Cordell Woodland on X. The Orioles plus 230 in the AL East behind only the Yankees, but those odds minus 215 already midway through the first half of the season. We'll be right back, kicking things off in hour two of the Lombardi Line next, recapping the NBA last night and looking ahead to this evening. We'll be right back.